Thanks for sticking with us. Or if you're just joining, you're listening to Radio Reading Services of Greater Cincinnati, a division of the Cincinnati Association for the Blind and Visually Impaired. I'm Stephen J. Lowenstein, and I'll continue with the second half of this week's edition of the Greater Cincinnati Business Report. We'll start off by looking at a Business Pulse poll. Like I said at the top of the program, a very important survey question being asked. Would you buy fewer Bengals tickets if there was zero threat of a TV blackout? And here's how people responded. There were a total of 792 responses. And the results are given in a semicircular form. And I'll start with the lowest, the highest percentage. And we'll go all the way down to the lowest, obviously. In answer to that question, would you buy fewer tickets if there was zero threat of a TV blackout? Here's how people responded. 75% said no. 20% responded yes. 4% responded, I'm not sure. I think while I'm at it, and we're on the subject of cute surveys, for lack of a better term, I'm going to give you another one. And this survey is entitled, Which of These Animal Mascots is the Best Pitch Man? Well, which of these endearing mascots do you think does the best job of advancing its national brand? Now, we would have included the Geico pig, but we didn't want him to do battle with the gecko. Now, the results on this survey are given a little differently than our typical weekly surveys, in that the responses are taken from across the United States, and the results are given by various colorations of states on a map of the United States. So, with that in mind, the responses are not just for the local business courier subscriber, but for those, or from those, from around the country. And I'll try and give you a sense of what areas of the country, north, south, east, or west, are responding to the corresponding percentage of votes given. So, let's start with the highest percentage going to the Geico gecko at 35%, and the majority of the votes for the gecko came from the western portion of the United States down through Texas. You have a great deal of the South, Pennsylvania, and Ohio, as well as the state of Michigan. That was followed by 34% responding, the Budweiser Clydesdale. And I suppose it's not a surprise that the majority of the votes cast were from the states in the center of the country, including Illinois, Missouri, all the way up through Wisconsin, and in the South, Alabama, ironically, New York State, as well as Maine, voted for the Clydesdale. 19% was the Aflac duck. There were only two states that chose that as the best representative, and they are Arkansas and Tennessee. Below Aflac duck was the Energizer bunny, with 8% of the respondents, and I can't even tell you where on the map that appears, since it's apparently not in one particular region. And the last category, surprising to me, at 4%, was the Coca-Cola polar bear. and that was given as the best representative by the state of Arkansas. Okay, let's get back to some more serious news at hand, as city council set to send repeal of transit earnings tax to voters. Cincinnati City Council is expected to vote Wednesday on an amendment to the city's charter that would repeal a 0.3% earnings tax used to fund the Southwest Ohio Regional Transit Authority's Metro bus system if Hamilton County voters approve a new sales tax to fund the agency. So once again, that's a reduction of 3% if Hamilton County voters agree to another new sales tax. Council's Education, Innovation, and Growth Committee sent the charter amendment to the full council on a 3-1 vote. If the full council approves it, voters would have their say in November. Majority would be needed to approve it. If they do, the city's earning tax would fall 2.1% to 1.8%. The charter amendment has the support of the Better Bus Coalition, which until Tuesday had considered its own transit improvement measure that would have raised the earnings tax. Cam Hardy, president of the grassroots organization, told council members that he was pleased with the progress a bipartisan coalition of stakeholders, including the Cincinnati USA Regional Chamber, has made. A united campaign that brings together bus riders, employers, public officials, everyone with a stake in public transportation, will succeed in Hamilton County and provide the investment needed to build a first-class bus system, the Better Bus Coalition said in a statement. Now, assuming it clears council, heads to the voters, passes this fall, the amendment will be an important milestone of the campaign to dramatically improve transit in the region. Transportation stakeholders, including the chamber, other senior business leaders, the Better Bus Coalition, Mayor John Cranley, Councilman P.G. Sittenfeld, State Representative Bill Seitz, and State Rep. Tom Brinkman Jr. are expected to back a countywide sales tax of up to 1% that we need to fund SORTA. Cradley and Sittenfeld are Democrats. Seitz and Brinkman are Republicans. The levy would bring about $110 million a year to start, which would allow SORTA to expand bus frequency. It would eliminate the agency's budget deficit and add new routes, including bus rapid transit on two corridors. BRT is faster, more rail-like bus service with dedicated lanes, signal priority, transit stations, and limited stops. The levy is also expected to include an infrastructure component expected to be used mainly to repair roads upon which buses run. A committee with city and suburban representatives would decide how that money will be doled out. Today is important, Hardy told council. We still have a long way to go. Sittenfeld and council members David Mann and Wendell Young voted for the amendment. Mann said he recently vacationed in a European city and never thought about using a car until he had to drive out into the country. Young said he believed the amendment is the first step toward a better transportation system in Cincinnati. We probably cannot have advanced transportation until we fix our bus system, Young said. Councilman Chris Seelback voted no, saying he preferred to keep some of the earnings tax in place given the city's budget deficits. He acknowledged that even if the city wanted to use some of the transit earnings tax, which by law must go for transit for general fund expenses, it would take voter approval to do so. He also opposed the city and SORTA's plan to move responsibility for the streetcar's operation from SORTA to the city. I don't think we have to pass funding for a suburban road in order to pass a bus levy, Seelback said. I don't think that SORTA has to divorce the streetcar in order for the levy to pass. Nevertheless, Seelback said he probably will support the countywide levy once he sees the ballot language. The plan still has its critics, mainly the three Democratic Hamilton County commissioners, Denise Driehaus, Todd Portoon, and Stephanie Sumereau. They back a 0.7% sales tax that would solely be used for bus service in Hamilton County, believing that a higher rate risks making the county uncompetitive from a sales tax perspective with other large Ohio counties. In 2018, commissioners had previously considered a 0.2% sales tax to deal with the county's budget deficit, but later repealed it before it took effect. If a 0.9% transit and infrastructure sales tax passes in 2020, Hamilton County's sales tax rate would be 7.65%, less than the 8% sales tax rate in Cuyahoga County. If county commissioners added another 2% for county operations, the sales tax would stand at 7.85%. In a recent interview with the Business Courier, Portoon said that the commissioners united around a single proposal was significant. I hope that others are aware of how significant that is, Portoon said. With the vast majority of SORTA's infrastructure, buses and repair and maintenance facilities in the city of Cincinnati, the commissioners believe some of the city's earnings tax should stay in place, Portoon said. Declined to say what he thought was an appropriate amount as conversations are ongoing. We're likely going to have to do something based on our own infrastructure needs, Portoon said of the county. We need to ensure the right amount of money is being spent on roads and bridges and that it is happening in a balanced way as opposed to something that might be focused on the roads and bridges SORTA is operating on. Now let's take a look at the arts front. This actually falls under the government and regulations section of the paper. It talks about a lovely community here in Cincinnati we don't hear a lot about, Silverton, as they turn to bold use of public art to create some economic momentum. Like a lot of small towns that boomed after World War II, the village of Silverton finds itself at a crossroads, somewhere between the heyday of its past and an uncertain future. In small but solid homes, many built in a bungalow style after World War II, are no longer in vogue as first-time homebuyers tend to look to hipper urban neighborhoods or farther out of the burbs. As a result, its population is in slow decline. After the 2010 census, Silverton no longer could claim enough residents to be officially designated a city. With fewer than 5,000 residents, Silverton is now a village with a business district, and it could use a shot of vitality. It's a story repeated many times in the inner ring suburbs of Cincinnati and other older cities. But Silverton has a plan to fight the post-war blues, and its plan that makes strategic use of big works of public art to build a sense of community, create a civic identity, prove that intangible but essential characteristic called quality of life. Village officials recently asked for proposals from artists for a visually bold and impactful permanent work of art to be located in Silverton Park, which is on Montgomery Road, a work that would serve as a landmark gateway to the village business district. It will be the second outsized work of art in the village, combined with other projects including a new brewery and an upscale housing development, will serve as an anchor of the village's revitalization strategy. Those are called anchors that will draw people, create that economic momentum, said village manager Tom Carroll. Village officials received proposals from 41 artists from around the country. The committee has narrowed the list to 5 finalists, including one from Cincinnati, Suzanne Fisher, a painter and muralist. The decision is expected to be made in August and the art installed by the spring of 2020. In 2018, village leaders unveiled the community's first large-scale creation, a mural by Artworks painted on a long wall on the side of the offices and workshop of Women Riding for a Change at the busy intersection of Montgomery and Plainfield Roads. Painted in pastel blues, golds, and reds, with 3 female figures, the message is, "We are all in this story together." That's a line from a piece by contemporary poet Sally Atkins. Located on a highly visible corner in the center of town, next to an inviting green space, the mural is meant to create a sense of place and a community identity. Public art can help bring people together, said Colleen Houston, chief programming officer for Arts Works. I know this mural will be a backdrop for so many community gatherings and opportunities to connect. Silverton's foray into public art began in 2014 with $19,273 it received from the sale of police equipment. That year, Silverton dissolved its police department that had dwindled from 10 full-time officers to 5, to contracted with the Hamilton County Sheriff's Office for Safety Services. No longer needed equipment like guns and handcuffs, so it sold all of that and used the money to create a special account for public art. I don't mean to sound corny, but it's a contemporary interpretation of the ancient Hebrew aspiration of turning swords into plowshares, Carroll said. The village council has since agreed to set aside 1% of its annual capital budget for public art. The fund that currently has a balance of a little more than $15,000. Funding the creation of public art is part of a larger strategy to raise the economic temperature in Silverton. In May, one of the region's newest craft breweries opened there, High Grain Brewery. The brew pub is located in Silverton's former municipal building, which the village leases to the brewers for $1 a year. The village is also prepared to forgive a $275,000 loan it made if High Grain's owners meet certain benchmarks. Tenants have begun moving into residences at age 47, a development of 1- and 2-bedroom apartments and townhomes. The name refers to the chemical symbol for silver, AG, and the atomic number for the precious metal is 47. Called the largest economic development project in Silverton's history, AG47 is a 204-unit luxury apartment development and the first phase of what is planned to be a $50 billion mixed-use project at the corner of Montgomery and Stewart Roads. The second phase is planned to be a 60,000-square-foot retail and office project. This may very well help us reverse population loss and become a city again, Carroll said. We'll grow our tax base 15 to 18%. It's very impactful for our community. Large-scale, $50 billion development projects and craft breweries are, of course, the draws that may bring visitors and homebuyers to Silverton, but art is an essential part of the mix, Carroll said. We really feel like there's a tremendous amount of tailwind behind Silverton, and art is part of what will help it catch that tailwind and continue the momentum, Carroll said. In the beginning, in 2017, Silverton drafted a master plan called Art in Public Spaces. The plan was funded by ArtsWay, the Murray and Agnes Seasongood Foundation, and the Silverton Community Improvement Corporation. It identified 8 potential sites for public art, including Silverton School, Vicky Park, the Village Business District, a pocket park on Stoll Lane, and Silverton Park. In education this week, one of Cincinnati's largest colleges could lose accreditation. One of the largest colleges in the Cincinnati region could lose its accreditation as the body that vouches for its academics raises concerns over the mission and management of the nearly 100-year-old institution. The Higher Learning Commission on July the 11th sent Cincinnati Christian University a show cause order, giving the school until the end of August to file a plan that addresses a number of concerns that threaten its accreditation. The Higher Learning Commission, based in Chicago, founded in 1895, accredits post-secondary education institutions in the central United States. The show cause order stems from the East Price Hill University restructuring that began in 2015. CCU by that time had seen enrollment fall from 1,000 in 2013, the first year the Courier began publishing list of largest area colleges and universities, to 818. That would drop to a low of 616 in 2017. At that time, Cincinnati Christian University, founded in 1924, originally as a seminary, was deficit spending to a tune of more than $350,000 a month. It also began the transition from a Bible college to a liberal arts school and increased its focus on athletics, planning to build a $5 billion stadium and aggressively recruit student athletes. The Higher Learning Commission, in a letter to CCU President Ron Heineman, alleges the university reduced admission standards to meet enrollment targets. It claimed that in 2018, the school's mission statement was revised. There is no evidence that the mission is broadly understood, and the shift to liberal arts and reliance on the recruitment of student athletes caused less certainty about the institution's mission. Cincinnati Christian University, in addition to a declining enrollment, has struggled with retention. The Higher Learning Commission pointed out that retention rates for first-year students have fallen from 75% in 2014 to 51% in 2016. Graduation rates have fallen from 42% in 2015 to 32% in 2017. The Higher Learning Commission also raises an issue about Heineman's placement as chief restructuring officer in charge of carrying out the plan to repay a $5.8 billion mortgage to Central Bank and Trust, He claims that Heidemann considers the bank's interest to take precedence over institutional interest. Now, Heidemann takes issue with that. He told me that he was elected as chief restructuring officer by the school's board of trustees, not the bank, to avoid having the bank appoint its own. His election was approved by the bank. I've done more than 48 mergers and acquisitions as a major partner in Careboard Capital and the Queen City Angels. I don't take a salary for this work with CCU. They asked me to stay on and help restructure it, he said. Ivan said the university is working with an educational consulting firm out of Washington, D.C., to address some of the Higher Learning Commission's concerns. For one, CCU halted its plan to build the $5 million stadium, and Ivan said it's cleaned up its application with the commission to make sure that the sports programs were done in accordance with accrediting body rules, something the previous administration did not do. He said the university has also beefed up its remedial education program, something else the Higher Learning Commission raised as an issue in its show cause order, in order to accommodate the number of student athletes it is admitting. We are an urban school. We feel pretty critical to Lower Price Hill. We're a mission school, so we're targeting first-generation college students. They require more academic attention, so the HLC rightfully pointed out that we didn't have adequate support for the sports thing. Heidemann said he appointed a provost in charge of reforming the school's academics, as well as three assistant provosts. He said he expects the university to exit the process with its accreditation intact. He said the university is seeing positive earnings before interest, taxes, depreciation, and amortization, and its enrollment rose 14% last year, which he expects to continue growing this fall. We do expect to evolve from this, change the course of our strategy that was frankly the wrong strategy, he said. Cincinnati Christian University is the region's 13th largest university, with 694 students enrolled as of the fall of 2018. That's according to Courier Research. Well, that brings us to an end of this week's program. You've been listening to the Greater Cincinnati Business Report, here on Radio Reading Services of Greater Cincinnati, a division of the Cincinnati Association for the Blind and Visually Impaired. I'm Stephen J. Lowenstein. Thanks for listening. Join me next week at this very same time for another fun and exciting fact-filled edition of the Greater Cincinnati Business Report.